The Cascade-Siskiyou National Monument straddling the state line did not double in size, but it did get bigger through an order by President Obama late in his term. The monument was roughly 65,000 acres and grew by another 48,000 or so. The president has the power to create or enlarge monuments through the Antiquities Act, passed in the early 20th century. That power is called into question by legal actions filed against the Cascade-Siskiyou expansion, one by counties that get income from federal timber sales, one by the timber industry. We talked to a cattle group last week, which has not filed suit but does not support the expansion. We are talking to two expansion supporters in this segment. Susan Jane Brown is with the Western Environmental Law Center and joins us by phone from Portland. Hi, Susan Jane.
Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Good. Good to have you back on The Exchange. Dave Willis is in the studio here. He's with the Soda Mountain Wilderness Council. Dave, good to have you back.
Hello, Jeff.
So let's start with you, Dave. Give us a sense of the areas within the monument managed for timber, because it is a timber set of concerns that brought this to court.
You're talking about the expansion area?
Well, and within the monument generally, and within the expansion area included is that, yeah.
Well, you got to remember that the Cascade-Siskiyou National Monument is the only national monument established specifically to protect biodiversity. So there's a mosaic of habitats. It's not uniformly timber. And even where there's forest, it's not uniformly commercial forest. So, and that forest is very important. The Cascade-Siskiyou Monument is a critical crossroads of connectivity between the globally world-class Siskiyou Mountains and the Southern Cascade Range.
Explain that connectivity. I was just reading a New Yorker piece about Los Angeles and pumas recently, and you might have read it in the last month or so, but the idea of not having just islands of wildlife is, I mean, we're working to change that system. Is that it?
Right. Islands of protected areas pretty much get impoverished biologically. If the critters can't get back and forth, they have to just marry their cousins, and eventually they tend to die out. So the Klamath-Siskiyou ecoregion is the most botanically diverse coniferous forest in North America, if not the world. And this, the land bridge across Siskiyou Summit and Pilot Rock, Soda Mountain, and on up towards the Hyatt and Howard Prairie Lakes and so forth. That's a real, again, a critical connectivity crossroads for species to get back and forth. And the biodiversity is more than just the connectivity between the Cascades and the Siskiyous, because you've got other ecotypes in there as well. The oak savanna coming up from the Rogue Valley, the Klamath River sneaking in from east of the Cascades, bringing a Great Basin sage and juniper influence. And from further south, the Shasta Valley influenced the more Mediterranean chaparral, all whirling around there in an ecological mulligan stew. And it's that juxtaposition of so many different types of species in one particular place that's the meta object of biological interest, the biodiversity for which the monument was established, and the connectivity between those ecoregions, the other meta-object of biological interest. That object of biological interest is an Antiquities Act term of art.
So supporters like you talk in terms of biological diversity. Resource users talk in terms of the resource potentially getting cut off from them. Are you aware of any timber sales currently pending within the monument boundaries as they currently exist? As they've been expanded to exist, I should say, should clarify?
I'm not aware of any. There may be some mop-up of some old ones in the northern area.
Mm-hmm. Did the lawsuit surprise you at all, lawsuits?
Well, we'd heard a lot of saber rattling, so it wasn't a big surprise.
Susan Jane Brown at the Western Environmental Law Center, let's turn to you. I mean, you've gotten used to suits over specific timber sales and over sale programs, obviously both the BLM and the Forest Service. How common, though, is this, a suit against a monument expansion?
Well, I think it's safe to say that this is a somewhat unusual occurrence. In the past, with other monuments, such as Grand Staircase Escalante, we've heard of local opposition to those efforts over the years, and as Dave said, a lot of saber rattling. But actual litigation to challenge monument designations, or in this case expansions, are fairly rare. And in this case, there actually doesn't seem to be a focus on the Antiquities Act, but rather the Oregon and California Lands Act. So in that respect, I think it's safe to say that this is a very unusual situation.
All right. So that is the act that donates or gives half of the revenue from timber sales on the former Oregon and California Railroad grant lands, now BLM land, to the county. So you can certainly see where the counties have a vested interest in this. But so is that what they're just saying, is they want to make sure that the sales on those lands are protected?
Well, it's a little bit challenging, honestly, to say for sure what their intention is with their lawsuits, and I wouldn't want to speak for them. But by the language that they're using in the complaints, they believe that the Oregon and California Lands Act essentially trumps any other statute, including the Antiquities Act, when it comes to the management of these lands. And so their focus is certainly on their interpretation of the Oregon and California Lands Act, but I think they probably will have an uphill battle trying to vindicate those claims in court.
This sounds similar to the arguments used by the people who say that the 1872 mining law rises above all others and is supreme to all others. When push comes to shove between a couple of laws that appear to have different aims, how is that conflict decided, Susan Jane?
Well, it's decided by a judge, and there are a number of legal principles that do come into play. And what we generally know as a general statement when you're looking at different statutes is that you do try to read them in harmony. So you do try to read them so that there is not a conflict. And our position is that there is not a conflict between the ONC Act and the Antiquities Act. If there is a conflict, which again, we don't think that there is, but if there is, the court will look to a number of things, including, for example, whether Congress was aware of a pre-existing law when it enacted another law. So, for example, the Oregon and California Lands Act was enacted in 1937, and the Antiquities Act was on the books for at least 30 years prior to that. And so, under the laws of statutory construction and interpretation, we have to assume that Congress knew what it was doing when it wrote the ONC Act, and it knew that the Antiquities Act was in existence, and Congress knows how to exempt itself from laws when it writes new laws, and it did not do that when it enacted the ONC Act. So we believe that there is not a conflict, and if there is one, then the interpretation will be relatively straightforward.
So it can be as simple as this law came first.
That's right.
Susan Jane Brown is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange from the Western Environmental Law Center. Dave Willis is with the Soda Mountain Wilderness Council. We're talking about the expansion of the Cascade-Siskiyou National Monument being taken to court by counties in Western Oregon and by the timber industry. We did have an interview set up with the president of the Association of ONC Counties, who then withdrew. That's Douglas County Commissioner. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. When we lost the interview with the Douglas County Commissioner, we asked somebody else who did not support monument expansion to come on last week. We ended up with the representative from the Cattlemen's Association. And Dave, did you get a chance to hear that and his concerns about he's just afraid the monument is going to be a big overstocked timber area that'll just go up like a big torch in a fire?
Yeah, I did hear a few alternative facts from that gentleman.
What did you find to be alternative in the facts?
Well,
or unfactual and alternative?
He tried to compare the grass on the monument area to somebody's front yard that didn't get mowed. That's kind of a simplistic comparison. If there are a number of scientists that say when the cattle eat that grass all the way down to the nub, it opens up the soil and the seedlings come in. So when you get a fire in a bunch of plantation-type seedlings and young trees, that's a lot more of a heavy-duty fire than a quick grass fire. So that fire argument, that fear of fire card that he was trying to play, that can cut both ways. And the fact is it's a lot more complicated than that, especially in a monument established to protect biodiversity that has a mosaic of habitats, a lot of different things going on up there.
We had a couple of responses on the idea of the cattle spending time in water, and the Cattlemen's Association rep talked about the fact that what he says, cows spend less than 5% of their time in water. But I think you've been tracking stream damage from cattle for quite a while now.
Well, I know what BLM's study of the grazing allotments in the monument came up with. And they looked at five different factors as far as the impacts of private cattle on the public lands in the monument on the different grazing allotments. And watershed function riparian was one of them, along with watershed function uplands and ecological processes, water quality, native threatened and endangered, and locally important species. And those private cattle on public lands, the BLM study showed there was a lot of degradation going on. The Soda Mountain allotment with three different lessees. Not only did it not pass muster with proclamation protection, but the regular rangeland health analyses that BLM does on grazing anywhere, the Soda Mountain allotment and the Dixie allotment, they didn't pass one, 0 for 5, as far as passing those different rangeland health standards. What's interesting is the cattle persons seem to say you're going to be forced off the monument if you're grazing on the public land in the monument. We got legislation passed in 2009 and a number that allowed allowed ranchers to donate their grazing leases to BLM. And then the legislation said if any ranchers donated, the BLM had to accept and permanently retire. They were donating because we were paying them with privately raised money to donate their leases.
Was it a fair market rate?
I would say they got a golden saddle.
Really?
I'd say it was much better than fair market rate, yes. So a number of ranchers, basically 97% of the existing monument ranchers and some outside, did take the buyout. But those that didn't, including the Dixie allotment and the Deadwood allotment that has a little bit of land in the monument but was and now is in the existing monument but was studied by BLM, Deadwood only passed 1 out of 5 rangeland health analyses. Dixie passed 0. Buck Mountain passed 1 out of 5. Those allotments are still being actively grazed. BLM has not moved to cancel those allotments. Nobody has been forced, no grazing lessee has been forced off their allotments in or near the monument because of the monument proclamation. And it's been, 16 and a half years since the original monument. So I think some of the fears are overblown as far as anything immediate happening or who knows, anything ever happening at all. BLM has not found it within themselves, despite the proclamation language, to cancel any grazing allotments, no matter how much degradation that grazing is doing to the monument biological objects of interest.
So back to the legal end with Susan Jane Brown. Are the suits by the counties and the timber industry filed in the same or separate courts?
They are in separate courts. The Association of Oregon California Counties filed their lawsuit in the D.C. District Court, and then Murphy Company filed their lawsuit in the Federal District Court in here in Oregon.
All right, so no particular chance, I would think, in districts on opposite sides of the country that those cases would be merged. And when you look at the basic complaints, do they look very similar?
Well, the complaints are quite similar, actually. The AOCC complaint is a little bit longer than the Murphy Company complaint, but they both raise only one claim under the Oregon and California Lands Act, and so they are quite similar in their nature. And it is possible, even though the suits are filed on opposite ends of the country, it is possible that the cases would be combined. There's some procedural maneuvering that would need to be done, and the judges would have to agree to it. But it is certainly our position that that both cases should be heard here in Oregon, given that this is where the lands are, and this is where the monument is designated, and the decisions were made, and it's where the people will be affected are here in Oregon. So if it comes to it, it's our position that those cases should be here in Oregon.
Susan Jane, the Antiquities Act and the authority of the president seem clear, but obviously the political system in our country just got a very thorough shaking. Is there any reason to believe that the folks making these lawsuits are hoping that the judicial system might get a bit of a shaking too?
Well, again, I certainly wouldn't want
to.
I don't read minds. I'd love that ability, but don't have it. But I think that there is a hope that the political environment is more conducive to the plaintiff's interpretation of the ONC Act. I think that that's probably safe to say. So they may have other ulterior motives in mind, and I think we'll just have to see how that plays out.
I don't know if you're following the other cases under the Antiquities Act. There was a big complaint that went up about the designation of the Bear's Ears Monument in Utah. And do you know if that's being challenged in court?
I don't know that. I wouldn't be surprised. Certainly, Bear's Ears has been very highly publicized, and many on both sides of the argument there, and so is the political delegation is also engaged. So it would not surprise me to see litigation filed over that monument as well.
Dave Willis, I guess this will be our last question, so I'll give it to you. I mean, why expand the monument rather than make it the ultimate size in the first place? Why did Bill Clinton make a smaller monument than Barack Obama thought was necessary?
Well, we've learned a lot since 2000 when President Clinton established the monument. And scientists got together in 2011 and they looked at what the proclamation said was supposed to be protected and what the boundaries were. And they said, whoa, the proclamation in 2000 nor the BLM 2008 management plan didn't say a single thing about climate change, and that's something that's going to have more of an effect. So we're going to need more elevations, and we're going to need larger habitats. Increasing population pressures and development on adjacent lands, these scientists and 85 scientists from around the country said this monument needs to be bigger for the proclamation to protect what it was established to protect.
And bigger it is for the moment. We'll see how the lawsuits pan out. Dave Willis is with the Soda Mountain Wilderness Council. Susan Jane Brown with the Western Environmental Law Center. Thank you both for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks.